Good afternoon. I'd like to continue this discussion about calculations of evapotranspiration within the DSAT crop models, only I'm not working with maize in Arizona, but cotton. And so I'll be taking you through an evaluation that I've done with the model for Arizona conditions in an arid environment. And I'll give you the punchline to begin with. The thing that I've had the most trouble with the model in Arizona is getting enough ET at all. I worked with the model for six or seven years in Arizona, and I just cannot get enough ET out of the model to match what we're measuring. So I'm going to talk to you about that. So we all know what these crop models are good for. They're good for irrigation, good for fertilizer. They can be used in crop improvement, climatology applications, precision agriculture, economics. The crop grow cotton model is one of the models within the DSAT family. It is a reparameterization of the soybean model in the suite of models. Mostly crop grow cotton has been evaluated in the southeast U.S. under humid conditions for cotton production. So there is a need to test it for conditions in the west, in Arizona, in West Texas, where we are very much water limited and dependent on irrigation. So the objective of this study was to evaluate crop grow cotton for conditions in central Arizona. And I'm using three experimental studies from our location at the Maricopa Agricultural Center, in Maricopa, Arizona. A little background about the crop grow model. It calculates a series of growth stages based on photothermal time. Key ones include emergence, the time of first leaf, first flower, first seed, and in case of cotton, first cracked boll. Flower numbers and boll numbers are calculated and fruits are aborted. The way that the model calculates interception of light is by assuming a elliptical hedgerow canopy, so that ellipse gives the canopy height and the canopy width. The potential carbon assimilation by the model is calculated at the leaf level using biochemistry equations of Farquhar. Calculations of growth and maintenance respiration are then deducted from that potential, and the final actual assimilated carbohydrate is reduced further according to any soil water or nitrogen stress that the crop is under. As far as soil water balance and ET modules, I use the Ritchie method within the model. It's a tipping bucket approach for soil water redistribution. A layered soil profile is used, typically 10 layers down to 210 centimeters is common. And by default in the model, there are two choices for evapotranspiration. There's a Priestley-Taylor approach, or there's an approach based on a modified FAO 56. And this would be the original one that I think Kendall used for comparing his new approaches. So I'd like to review some of these evapotranspiration methods again so that we're all on the same page. So FAO 56 was published in 1998 by Rick Allen. One of the main components of the document is explaining how to calculate what's termed reference ET, or ET zero. This is the ET that would happen under well-watered conditions for a grass of particular characteristics. Okay, and the equations are given so that if this condition is true, this is the amount of ET that would evapotranspirate. Is that a verb? I don't know. Would be emitted from that crop. So we need weather data to calculate this ET0, a reference ET, air temperature, humidity, solar radiation, wind speed data. Then we have, in terms of irrigation scheduling and irrigation water management, the document explains what's termed a crop coefficient. And this is a value that changes over the time of year in order for you to convert that reference ET value to what your particular crop would be transpiring under well-watered conditions. Okay, and so I'm showing here a typical KC curve that would be used, say, for cotton irrigation. You first calculate the reference ET from the grass, Then you use the KC value to tell you what your crop, be it wheat, be it cotton, be it whatever, is transpiring. And this is the equation that's used. KC times reference ET gives you the actual crop ET. These equations were further modified, refined, standardized, put into a well-documented step-by-step formulation for calculating reference ET in 1995. Again, Allen and others. In the Civil Engineering Society's standard reference ET equation. Okay, so that's how typically the engineers and irrigation scheduling folks will think about ET and will use calculations of ET in order to make decisions about irrigation scheduling. So let's move to the crop growth model. Here we're adding a simulation of crop growth, a dynamic simulation of crop growth. So this KC curve, we actually want to try to replace, to try to calculate through the variables that are related to the crop growth simulation. So it's a little different approach. Typically what's been done in the past is to use the leaf area index state variable in order to calculate a value of KC. Okay, and so this is the older approach that's used in the model. There's reference ET. I assume, Ken, that this approach was roughly developed at the time of the original FAO 56, mid-90s or so.
Well, we did it 5 or 6 years later, but yeah.
Okay. So the point is that this ASCE standard equation probably was not available yet. So the original model was developed here. This is, again, the equation that Kendall showed as an approach to calculate KC with that older method. In the current study, what I've done and what I've had to do, again, in order to get enough ET simulated with this model, is to reprogram the entire ET calculation, and I've verbatim followed the ASCE standard to calculate reference ET with the model, and then I'm using Kendall's approach that he just presented to calculate this value of KC. He had a little different terminology here. I'm using 0.35 as his KC min, and this EO ratio parameter is, again, the KC max. Now I'd like to talk with you about the data that was collected over time at our location that I've used to evaluate the model. So going way back, I was in junior high in 1990, and these great researchers sitting in the room here were conducting the very first FACE experiments at our location. So they put out devices to elevate the carbon dioxide in the canopy in Maricopa, Arizona, 1990 and 91. Another treatment that was imposed at that time was wet and dry irrigation. So we had main treatments of FACE where the canopy was elevated to a carbon dioxide concentration of 550 parts per million for 14 hours daily. And at that time, the ambient conditions at our station was 370 parts per million under both wet and dry irrigation. A decade later, this is when we're getting into the precision agriculture is getting to be a hot topic of research. Researchers at that time developed what was known as the Ag Eyes experiment. I think it's very creative. Ag Eyes is what they call it because it's a remote sensing device that was attached to a linear move irrigation system. So as this linear move traveled across the field, there was a cart that was going transversely along the length of that linear and collecting sensor data. So Ag Eyes stands for Agricultural Irrigation Imaging System, but it's a remote sensing system. To test that system, they had a study in 1999 where they grew cotton under optimum and low water and optimum and low nitrogen. So it wasn't intended to be used for modeling, but nonetheless, it's a good data set. Okay, about a decade ago, researchers at the station conducted what we called the FICE experiments. FICE standing for FAO 56 Irrigation Scheduling Experiments. And here what the main objective was to test remote sensing-based approaches for getting at that KC value for scheduling irrigation. So you have it, you collect an NDVI, you relate NDVI to a KC value, and use that NDVI to convert from your reference ET calculation to what it actually needs to be applied in terms of irrigation to a cotton crop. That was the main approach, main treatment here. We had two different methods for getting that KC value, one based on NDVI and one based on just the standard curve reported in FAO 56. To ensure that there was crop variability for the study, there were sub-treatments, including different planting densities and high and low nitrogen treatments in order to have a variability in crop response so that we could test these remote sensing approaches for irrigation scheduling. So that was done in 2002 and 2003. Generally we have a few sets of data for all the experiments. The availability of data and the quality of the data do vary because these studies were not intended for crop model evaluation, but generally we have crop development. Generally we know from plant counts when the crop emerged. We have some idea based on observations or based on digital photographs of the canopy of when the flowering was happening. And we have to desiccate cotton in Arizona. So we know the dates that we applied the desiccant. That gives us some idea about when the crop was mature. As far as crop growth data go, we have destructive biomass weight and leaf area index measurements for most of the studies. Canopy height and width was also measured. Soil water status is regularly monitored at our sites using neutron access tubes with neutron probes. And so we have soil water measurements in detail, and we're able to calculate actual ET from those measurements based on a soil water balance. This table gives some of the calibration results for the model. I focused on a set of parameters listed here. All the parameters for FACE are calibrated the same because the same variety was used there. Similarly for FICE, the same variety was used, so all the parameters are the same. A different variety, again, was used for the 99 study. These parameters mostly deal with the progression through the growth stages of the model. And so we've adjusted those to fit our observations. A few parameters are related to crop growth, the LF max parameter, and leaf growth with this LAVR parameter. These two parameters govern the partitioning to bowls. Seed cotton is what the model simulates. A few other parameters related to thermal time or development. And the important one here is the EO ratio. So this is the KC max, maximum KC. For these studies, I've calibrated to about 0.31, 0.35 or so, which would be reasonable. These would be reasonable, maybe a little high, but reasonable maximum crop coefficients for cotton in Arizona. Just a little bit about the model's response then. This is the response to irrigation under the FACE experiment. So the 1990 FACE experiment and 1991 FACE experiment, this would be the plots of the high and low water treatments. In 1990, there was a 130 millimeter deficit between the high and low irrigation total over the season. That deficit was increased in 91. We had a 256 millimeter deficit between the high and low irrigation. So you can see the model responding to those water deficits. However, in 1999, we had the Ag-Eyes experiment going. This year, there was only a 64 millimeter deficit between high and low irrigation. And you see that the model is not responding as well. The message would be that the model does respond better for when water deficits are higher, but here we're having a little trouble getting a response when those water deficits are minimal. This shows the response to nitrogen fertilizer. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these since this session is about ET, but for leaf area index here, you see the response between high and low nitrogen rates. Planting density, I'm showing here dense versus the sparse treatments during the FICE studies, 2002 and 2003. The model tends to overestimate on the dense. So We're getting, for LAI, we're getting a higher simulation for dents than was measured. There would be a typical treatment that actually falls right between, if you can imagine. I didn't graph it because it'd be too messy, but it falls right between the two. So the message would be that if you're using the model for non-standard planting densities, be careful. Here's the response to canopy weight, and we didn't get as much of a response there. We didn't have any data in 02 for canopy weight. But in 03, for the sparse treatment, the model seems a little like it's overestimating, but underestimating the dense treatment in terms of canopy weight. The model's response to free air carbon dioxide enrichment from 1990 and 91. Again, we're showing that there would be a high. The model is simulating a higher leaf area index and canopy weight under face, which has been observed and in field studies. Not as much of a response, say, in the 1991 study. Looking at yield, I'll say that these have been heavily calibrated, highly calibrated. Maybe overly calibrated would be a word. One of the points being is that these measurements, unfortunately, are not very representative of what actual cotton yields could be. The reason being is that during the phase studies, they harvested the cotton actually 1 month prior to common practice in the area, just as a way to save expense for the CO2 facilities. The AgEye study unfortunately suffered from an insect infestation. Ligus infested the field later in the season when they cut an alfalfa field nearby. And ligus has the characteristic of attacking the healthy bolls. So the results of this year was that the well-watered, well-fertilized cotton was actually lower yielding than the other because the bugs ate it. And another point to make about these yield values is that, you know, historically in cotton, I'm not sure, it's not the same. I grew up in the Midwest, and, you know, everyone's concerned when you take your grain to the elevator how much moisture it is because you have to pay to dry it and different things. I don't know that that's been the case so much in cotton production. And so I didn't get any evidence from these data. Again, they all predate me at the center, but I didn't get any evidence from the data that they had been corrected for dry matter. So, of course, that's important because that's what these models are simulating. So, unfortunately, we get a good response here. I've calibrated it that way, but the data may not be very useful for this purpose. Evapotranspiration response, you see here. We can tell that for the red squares here that the model's responding pretty well in terms of ET to the large water gradients that were imposed during the phase study. For the other studies, like for instance FICE, we see quite a wide variability in ET simulated among probably the planting densities, whereas we're not seeing as much in the measured ET in that case. Okay, so now for the meat of the talk, and perhaps the most interesting piece of the talk is I used my data to compare all these different methods of calculating ET within the DSAP model. So we have Priestley-Taylor here. Priestley-Taylor does not have an ETO component, so it's not calculated. The original FAO method that was included in the model are the calculations are here, and then this one would be the new approach based on the ASCE standardized reference equation with Kendall DeYoung's approach for the KC calculation. So what I'm showing is ETO, which would be a reference ET under a grass, uniform grass, well-watered grass, PET, which would be now transferring using the crop coefficient as simulated by the model to move toward a potential evapotranspiration. And then, finally, ETC would be the actual crop evapotranspiration when you count for water stress and such. So the overall gist of the story is that this new method simulates 209 millimeters more reference ET than the original FAO approach. So this is a magnitude that's similar to the water deficits that were imposed during FACE. So you can see my struggle if I'm trying to get more ET out of the model to get these differences between treatments. When the original approach simulates 209 millimeters less ETO than say the new approach, then it makes it more difficult. An interesting result is that whenever we combine the ASCE approach with De Jong's approach and compare that in terms of PET to the original FAO 56 approach, then that deficit or that difference reduces to 80. That tells me that the new approach for calculating KC is a little bit less impactful, say, on the calculation of ET than the original approach that was in it. Overall, crop ET was underestimated by 8% with Priestley-Taylor, by 11% with the FAO 56 original method, and 1% with the new method. So why? Additional thoughts about this, why? What causes these differences, say, in ETO between the new and old approaches in the model? And I focus specifically on the FICE data for 2003, and I looked at each calculation and compared them side by side. So what I found was that some differences. The calculation of the psychrometric constant, there's a 4% difference. The calculation of net radiation resulted in a 3% difference between the methods. And the slope of the saturation vapor pressure temperature curve, there's a 9% difference between the calculation approaches. There were also different methods for calculating aerodynamic resistance. The new ASCE method has a constant coefficient that's used for this purpose, whereas the previous method actually tries to calculate some of those resistances explicitly. All of that comes down to a 28% difference in the calculation of reference ET based on the equations of the two different approaches. Another thought, this EO ratio parameter, or maximum crop coefficient, as we call it. When I use the new approach that combines Kendall's method with ASCE approach, again, my maximum crop coefficients were 1.3, 1.5. These are reasonable for cotton in AZ, in Arizona. If I were to use the old method, the only way that I can get enough ET out of the model is to bump that parameter up to like 1.4, 1.6, and I published a paper on wheat 5 years ago when I first started working with these crops in Arizona, where I think I had like something like 1.8. And I talked to Doug, and he's our irrigation expert. He's like, that's off the charts. That makes no sense. So the point being is that when I use these new ET calculation approaches, I can specify maximum KCs that are more in line with what's published in FAO 56. All of this points to the need to for these efforts that we've been discussing to standardize our methods for calculation of ET within these models, so that when we compare them, we're actually comparing apples to apples and not different things. So, in conclusion, I've evaluated the crop grow cotton crop component for cotton in Arizona. Responds appropriately to most management, as you would expect. Again, the non-standard planting densities were a problem, and the model was based on soybeans, so there's a little bit of some waving of the hand when you go to cotton because of the way that cotton differs in how it reaches maturity and requires defoliation and things. The model responded appropriately to increased carbon dioxide, as would be expected, but as was pointed out in the first talk, air temperature is a main problem here. I'm using air temperature to run these simulations. We know that canopy temperature is somewhat less than air temperature under well water conditions. And so we need to have that into the model and use that. As far as the water component, I think I've went over the main points. The ET component needs more work. One of the things that's led us down these efforts to modify the ET component is that we are actually trying to use the model in Arizona to actually schedule irrigations in real time. And you can't do it if you can't get ET stimulated correctly. So I'll wrap it up there and leave.
Thank you, Kelly.
Leave it to you.